Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
92.9 The Game, reacting to the NFL draft. And I know there's a lot of talk about the Georgia football players here. Let's just... loathe to do a lot of lists, but I think fans want to know where some of the players did end up going. Seven Georgia players were drafted. DeAndre Baker to the Giants, Mecole Hardman to the Chiefs, Riley Ridley went to the Bears, DeAndre Walker to the Titans, Lamont Gallard to the Cardinals, Isaac Nauta to the Lions, and Terry Godwin went to the Panthers. Not to New England, but to the Panthers. And the undrafted free agents, one Georgia player signed with the Falcons, that was wide receiver Jason Stanley.
Mm-hmm.
Elijah Holyfield did sign, again, undrafted, went to Carolina. Jonathan Ledbetter, undrafted, went to the Dolphins. Natress Patrick, undrafted, went to the Rams. Jay Hayes, undrafted, went to the Steelers. And Nick Moore, undrafted, went to the Swampers. Henry Santa Moore was undrafted, Hugh, and he, from Georgia Tech, he ended up going to the Vikings. That's a guy that I'm going to be interested to see, you know, going forward.
Did he tackle right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. He talked about him a lot last year. Pretty good player. You know what I found interesting as far as Georgia Tech is concerned? None of the guys got invited to the combine. And going to T-Day this weekend, I will say this. They had like a – well, Friday. They had like a 23,000 people out there.
Yeah, we thought it'd be a big crowd.
Yeah, it was a big crowd, man. It was a lot of alumni came back. Shout out to all the Georgia Tech alumni, man. You know, they got on us because I went with my man Chuckery. John Chuckery's a party too, by the way. Went with Chuck. And a lot of them knew that we were from this radio station. They said, why y'all don't never give Georgia Tech love? And I'm like, dude, we give Georgia Tech love. It's easy to give love when you're winning, though. I mean, and, you know, we explained that. But I will say this. The energy out there was totally different than it has been any other time that I have been to T-Day. Kids are excited. They're young. They're small. That's going to be an issue. But I think that they're going to play exciting. And, you know, Coach Collins got to get some – he got to get some dogs in there. I think that's what they're lacking right now. I think they said they had somewhere where there was like 200 and some odd potential recruits there, college kids. They got the kids in there. They just got to get them to go to school there. But the excitement is there. I think Georgia Tech is in a couple of years, John. They're going to surprise a lot of people.
Two things. One, they're going to have to be a little patient with Coach Collins.
They have to be.
I mean, when your bookend games for the year are against Clemson and Georgia.
It's going to be tough.
Man, all right? So this year might be, because it's a transition year, give him a little bit of time. He's going to have to get the right players in, so give him a year, and we'll see where they are next year. You know, and maybe they exceed expectations. I think if they're 6-6 this year and go to a minor bowl, that, you know what, I'm taking that as a win all day long. Second thing is, we don't give them enough. Josh, how many times has Josh Pastner spent a full hour in this studio with us, with you and I?
Yeah, bringing it down, talking
lot.
About it. Yeah, trying
a
to get
lot.
It done.
Well, don't give him enough attention. Good heavens.
Well, no. Well, you know, as far as football is concerned, I think it's coming, though. I mean, they're trying to change the culture. Shout out to Coach Marco Coleman. Was there watching him coach up that young defensive line. They got some young studs out there. They just have to grasp the concept of what they're trying to do. Looks like the defense, to me, right now is probably going to be relied on heavily as far as, you know, Georgia Tech is concerned as far as trying to keep them in football games. Kind of young, but that I think that's going to be the thing that you have to focus on. I don't even think – just watching the spring game, John, I don't even think they have the quarterback situation kind of solidified just yet. Mm-hmm. Really don't think they have that
going. No, they don't. No, they don't have that solidified either. Penny Hart, the star wide receiver from Georgia State, signed as an undrafted free agent with the Indianapolis Colts, so he gets to catch passes from Andrew Luck.
I know he's going to go out there and work hard for that.
He sticks. Chase Middleton, also from Georgia State, signed with the Texans. Darnell Holland, the big bruising running back from Kennesaw State, is a Swamper. Yuck. Ellis Richardson out of Georgia Southern went to the Bears. Malik Henry out of West Georgia went to the 49ers. And Devontae Jackson out of West Georgia went to the Broncos. All signings undrafted free agents. So that's just kind of the list. Thomas Dimitroff joins us in 17 minutes. We'll talk to the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons about what he sees. And one of the questions I'm going to have is his list of undrafted free agents, the 20 guys that signed as undrafted free agents. I'm kind of curious as to whether or not he thinks that one or two of them are kind of hidden little gems that he might have been able to kind of steal away, and that if he's curious about seeing what you can get. I always want, because remember, sometimes undrafted free agents hit. Jesse Tuggle was an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
Sometimes they do. And sometimes you get a, you know, everybody missed on a guy. You know, it happens. And he shows up and you go, oh, wow, look at this. So that'll be kind of fun talk with Thomas Dimitroff. This hour of the show brought to you by Renter's Warehouse. We're taking a lot of your calls and reaction to the draft on our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, on our Twitter at 929TheGame, which we're asking you to grade the draft, but more interested in your ability to tell us what you think in the comments section than what your grade is. A couple more quick calls here. Jack is all the way up in the road in Athens, and he joins us. Morning to you, Jack.
Oh, hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I want to say I'd give them a B+. At first, I was kind of disappointed that we didn't go with some defensive line in the first round or maybe second round. I give a B+ because I think that we made some good picks as far as the first two. I just think we could have got some better value with him as far as getting McGarry in the into the first round. But overall, I think we did pretty good. You got to protect Matt Ryan, and our defense was still top 15 before all the injuries. So thank you, guys.
I appreciate that, Jack in Athens. And Dimitroff has already addressed this. We can ask it again when he's on if you want. The reason they moved back into the first round with McGarry is that they believed that there was a run coming, and there, as it turns out, there was, on that particular position at offensive tackle, and they just didn't figure he'd be there by the time they got around to the middle of the second round. They think he'd be gone. And so they said, look, by the time they took Lidstrom, I think it's fair to say, Hugh, given the signings in the offseason of Brown and Carpenter, given the signing of Sam Brailo to a long-term dealer, a deal, by the time they took Lidstrom, if they were going to go get McGarry, they had pushed all their chips into the table, okay, on the offensive line. They had to go all in, because that's what they did. They went all in on this offensive line, to use a poker term. And so they couldn't miss out and not get the tackle that they, because they obviously had both of those guys really high, like 1-2 on their board.
And you can't coach nasty. You know, I've talked to a few guys about that, and if they are as nasty as their film suggests, they should be pretty good, and they should fit in here well, and they should help change the culture of this offensive line. That's the thing that I want to look and see what happens. You know, because it's a little different when you get on that professional side, and you know you're going out there and trying to be you know a world beater on this level, and I want to see if that translates well to this level. That's what I want to see, because we were talking about it in the break. Was it Taylor Lewan, the tackle for the Tennessee Titans?
Mm-hmm.
He's a nasty individual.
Oh, yeah, he is.
He's like so much so, I don't even like that dude, because I don't like the way he's disrespectful to defensive linemen. I really don't. But you got to like – if he's your teammate, you like that kind of nasty that he shows, because he's a heart snatcher.
Yeah, right. The one guy who says, well, you know, look at what Indianapolis did last year. I would hope that one of these guys approaches Quentin Nelson. I mean, Quentin Nelson, the guy that Indianapolis drafted, as good as Taylor Lewan is, I'm not sure there's a better offensive lineman in the NFL than Quentin Nelson already. I mean, that guy is just beyond good, okay?
No, but I'm telling you, it's something about having an offensive lineman that takes great joy, John, in just demoralizing defensive linemen. And as a former defensive lineman, it makes me mad, but at the same time, you respect that, because when you think about the mentality of most offensive linemen, that's not what they do. They're the type of guys like, hey, buddy, why are you playing so angry? What's wrong? Like, they're kind of like that.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, you know, we're just out here doing a job. I like those kind of guys that come out there and you know, if don't have your head on a swivel, they will take it off for you or they will readjust your shoulder pads for you. I kind of like those kind of guys, because when you got guys like that are blocking for you, that charges the running backs, that charges the receivers, that charges the whole offense. Because offensively, that's not – offensive players, they don't really have that kind of mentality. They don't have that kind of, like, killer instinct. Well, most of them don't. They have that kind of instinct where, you know, they're in it and they're constantly thinking. They don't really let their emotions take over. Sometimes you got to let those emotions take over and just whoop a man. And I like offensive linemen that are like that. And it seems like the Falcons have done a great job of getting two of those guys.
One more call here. Neil in Atlanta has been patient. We want to give him a chance here. Hey, Neil, welcome to the show.
Hey, John, as you, I think the offensive line choices were very good. The bigger, the better, badder, the better. But the question I have is, I haven't heard too much about the health of Devontae Freeman. Do you guys have any idea?
Well, yeah, as far as we know, he's fine.
Yeah, from what we've been told, he's fine.
Yeah. That's it. Yeah, they're ready to go. I mean, we've seen Devontae and Rico and Keanu again. Yes, everybody seems to be healthy. The kid Sheffield out of Ohio State's got a torn pec, but for the most part, the team seems to be healthy, and they just got to keep them healthy. That's what we got to try and keep them healthy. That's a healthy Devontae Freeman is a great player. We all know his impact on this team and how incredibly important he is to the success of this club. All right, your chance right now to win $1,000 in the national signing bonus.
Now it's time to reveal our national signing bonus code word. The code word is
auto, A-U-T-O, as in automobile. Auto, A-U-T-O, to 72881. That's auto, A-U-T-O, to 72881. Message data rates may apply to non-text and drive. Complete rules, 929thegame.com. Auto, A-U-T-O. Again, we've had it happen a few times today. Do not text auto to the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. We're just going to say text it to 72881 because he's not going to do you any good. It's a waste of a text, okay? Waste of your time to text it to the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Text auto to 72881, auto to 72881 in the national signing bonus. We're talking about the Falcons. You know, one of the things that was funny to me, just going back to the draft at large, was they were talking about Daniel Jones and all this. Dave Gettleman took Daniel Jones, and he shouldn't have taken Daniel Jones. And now mad Giants fans, and there were memes all over the place of these Giants fans throwing fits about what this.
But which is actually memes for the Giants.
Yeah, which is true. But, you know, you start to think about, you know, next year's draft, and the reason I say that is this. I think if you really needed a quarterback and you weren't thinking that you were going to win this year necessarily, maybe you should have waited till next year, or maybe you should have waited till the year after, because think of the guys that are going to be coming out in the next 2 years. Next year, you're going to have Tua. You're going to have Jake Fromm. You're going to have Shea Patterson. You're going to have all sorts of guys, Justin Herbert.
Yeah, a lot of young signal callers.
Yeah, this kid, there's a quarterback at Stanford you don't know about right now named KJ Costello, who's really good. And then, of course, the Trevor Lawrence draft the year after that. So this was, this was not a premium quarterback draft.
No, it wasn't. And there was a lot of names like the Daniels kid, the Jones kid that you're talking about that had everybody kind of scratching their head when the Giants took him. But you're probably looking at it as a situation where you know, you heard a lot of stories about how the Mannings are really familiar with this young man and how he could come in and probably learn from Eli Manning and take over eventually.
Hey, listen, if he turns into a star in a few years, we're all going, okay, you know, I mean, right? You know.
I mean, and again, John, this whole quarterback thing, man, is not an exact science. We never – like I remember a couple years ago, Mitchell Trubisky. Bears fan had a fit when they traded up and got Mitchell Trubisky. And, you know, there's a lot of people in the camp that feel like, you know, Dwayne Haskins should have been taken a lot higher than he was taken. But, hey, you never know what teams have on their draft board. That's why, again, never get too caught up or get you know – all excited about the draft reports or what somebody's saying, this, that, or the third, because you just never know what's on the team's draft board.
Right, this next class is going to have a lot of name value in quarterbacks with guys like Kelly Bryant and Jalen Hurts is going to be in there, Jake Bentley from South Carolina, those kind of guys, but Joe Burrow's in this draft, Sam Ellinger from Texas. So there's a whole bunch of quarterback names in there. Now, most of those guys are late-round picks, okay? They just are. They're going to be late picks. I know everybody's like, oh, what? But the one guy who's already projected to be a late-round pick is Jalen Hurts. But what happens if Jalen Hurts goes to Lincoln Riley at Oklahoma and lights it up? Listen, who had Kyler Murray as the number one pick this time last year? Nobody. And I mean nobody. Not even Kyler Murray. Thomas Dimitroff, general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, live next with John and Hugh. Morning show on Sports Radio 92 on the game on this Monday post-draft edition of John and Hugh. Hope you're having a safe drive in. Looks like a beautiful, warm day today. Let's talk about the draft from the inside perspective with the general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, Thomas Dimitroff, who joins us this morning on the WadeFord.com hotline. Morning to you, Thomas.
Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, good morning. Happy day after the draft, a couple days after the draft. But Thomas, what was it that you saw in your first draft pick that made you feel like he was the guy that you had to have for the Atlanta Falcons?
You know, Chris Lindstrom is one of those guys who the whole process, and it starts early as you're watching him, you're thinking, man, I really want to get a chance to know this guy and see if he's exactly what he looks like on the field. He's a hard-charging, tough, urgent, aggressive guy who, you know, he flies around, he's got range, he's got grittiness and toughness. Even when he does get knocked, you know, one way or another, like any offensive lineman will, he'll battle his butt back. Then we get a chance to meet him and spend time with him and realize, you know, his personality and his presence and his belief and his knowledge of football and his resiliency. We just felt like he was going to be a really important part of our offensive line today and growing into the future, a really, really important part for us.
You know, Thomas, now we've talked a bunch of times, and I remember a few times that you talked about the fact that for offensive linemen, you know, a lot of times coming out of college, they're not prepared for the NFL level. What was it specifically about him that you saw, and when did it start to change? When did the offensive lineman started to block a little bit better and make you change your philosophy a little bit?
Well, no, I'm not changing my philosophy. I understand that we have to make sure that we get youthful offensive linemen in here to grow with, and that's the way to do it, of course. We can go back and talk about our acquisitions in free agency. Part of having the acquisitions in free agency, which is a whole other topic, is to make sure that along the way they are helping with the development of the players that we bring in the college draft. This is a guy who comes from a program. I mean, you look into it. Boston College is tough, ornery, direct, candid, accountable. There's, to me, few programs in the NCAA right now that run their program the way that BC does. And this guy is going to be ready. He is a resilient guy who will work his butt off. He's not a guy that's going to tank. He's been through it time and again at Boston College, and that was another thing that was really important for us. You have to understand, from our perspective, evaluating, you know, programs throughout the NCAA is an important thing. To know what their coaches are coaching, how they're coaching, and how these kids are responding is an important thing.
Thomas Dimitroff, general manager of the Atlanta Falcons. I would like you to kind of bundle up the free agent signings with the draft picks, because I'd like to ask you, I want you to take me back to the end of the year, end of the season last season, when you made your evaluations. Was it then that you said, hey, listen, when you sat down with Coach Quinn, we have to fix this offensive line, and we have to do it in such a big way that we're going to be willing to kind of push all in?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, we talked about it at the end of the year, and I've been pretty outspoken about it. We did not want to be in the situation we were in last year. I mean, no one wants to talk about injuries, not as excuses, but few of us have ever been in a situation where we've lost two starting guards. So we knew that, you know, we were not going to come into that situation next year where, you know, the depth wasn't where the depth needed to be. And that was important for us. Again, back to acquisitions and free agency, back to two really solid picks in the draft. We need to continue to make sure to continue to build that O-line and be solid across the board. And, you know, we signed back Ty Sombrello, which was a really important signing for us. He has experience. He has athleticism and a knowledge of our system. Again, this comes back to being focused on having the five best offensive linemen. However it plays out, time will tell, of course. However it plays out in the immediate future or into the future, again, time will tell. We have a really competitive group right now, and that's important for us. That said, we knew that we were going to have to be creative with how we put together the rest of the team. We were very definitive about the areas on the team that needed building. And, you know, again, through spending a lot of time talking about getting the offensive lineman in the first round, as we did, and sitting for two rounds, we felt really, really comfortable. And interestingly enough, on that day that we weren't ostensibly working, we were really, really busy monitoring how things were playing out. It made it a lot more clear for us on day three to approach it the way we did. And quite honestly, we hit on the areas of need that we thought we needed for this football team.
Thomas Dimitroff, general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, with John and Hugh. All right, to that, let's talk about day three. You did, because we mentioned it earlier this morning, you needed a corner, you needed a big running back, you needed a defensive lineman. You went out and got those things, a kick returner. You seem to address all of those areas of need. So walk me through these guys a little bit from day three. Tell me about I actually want to kind of jump ahead of Sheffield here. I'm really interested in Kaminsky and Allison, those two in particular, and what they bring to this team. If you could address those two guys from an immediate impact basis.
Sure. John Kaminsky, you know, he's a defensive end that we picked from Charleston. Small school guy. We've rarely done that, at least since I've been here. We have not. This guy caught my eye from the very beginning. You know, we've had some really strong reports from our scouting staff on him, and it really piqued my interest on a guy who was, you know, rubber factory town, Ohio guy. Again, gritty, tough, hard-nosed guy who has never been given anything in his life, really good, really, really tough, you know, just his upbringing, just a tough guy, was passed over in the recruiting process, really started to come into his own. You know, he's a guy who has versatility to play DN, but also can move inside as he continues to gain weight. He's 285 pounds right now, has the ability to be 95-plus. And, Hugh, you understand what I'm talking about when I talk about that versatility. Again, he runs a 4.6, probably a 4.68 at that weight. We know that he can help us on special teams as well, being a big guy who can move down the field with range. Again, gritty, tough, upside guy. There's a little bit of sleeper to him, of course, around. People started talking about him as the draft process went on. We felt we needed to move up. I'm not going to put words in anyone's mouth. We moved up one pick for a reason, and we felt that that was really, really necessary, and I'll let you guys figure out that puzzle. But needless to say, we were going to be aggressive and not sit back and lose a guy like this that we wanted to work with.
So, Thomas, when you look at this defense right now, you know, you went out and you got some free agent guys. You went out and got Rashid Hageman. You brought him back into the fold. Is that saying basically that you feel like you have enough right now to get pressure on the quarterback and you're not so much really worried about that? That's why you put so much emphasis on the offensive side of the ball with the first two picks?
You know, had a lot of strong conversations with Coach Quinn. Obviously, he's the D coordinator, and we looked at it as two team builders being really, really clear and open-minded, not swaying towards D or O, really looking at what was the most important thing as far as approaching and building the team. Quite honestly, when we signed back, you know, Claiborne, and when we signed a really important signing with Tyler Davidson, that was a little bit under the radar as well. Tyler was an important part of this rotation for us, important for us, right? He played at New Orleans. He's a good football player. We didn't think we were going to have a shot at him, and it came around that it was, and so that's an important part. Again, Sheed coming back is, you know, that's a different story, of course. He adds to the depth of it all. He has to make his way every step of the way here. There's nothing given to him because of his past year, of course. We thought we'd add him to the mix there. But we continue to think, you know, we looked at it and we thought offensive line over acquiring, you know, moving up to acquire someone else in the draft, you know, that was important. I know there was a lot of talk about Wilkins from Clemson, good football player, no question. He was on our radar. We thought in the end that we needed to focus on this offensive line, and that was the direction we were going to go. We like our defense. We know they can continue to get better. We're really excited about having Dan be the D coordinator. His focus is going to be on the outside, too, as you know, meaning, you know, with Vic and Tack. We need to get some pass rush there, and we think we have the skills to do that. We weren't just going to, you know, just toss out what we believe in those two guys. That is really important for us. They need to reach their potential, and we think that Dan can really help there.
Thomas Dimitrov, general manager of the Atlanta Falcons. All right, back to that question about day three. Allison, what did you see in him? When I went back and looked at the tape, Thomas, he's a better blocker than I probably never focused on his blocking before. So that kind of jumped out at me. But we all said, everybody was saying, you need a big back. Well, he's a big back.
We needed, you know, going in, John, we needed to add to that running back group. When Tevin left this year, it was important. And we said from the very beginning, we were going to work our butts off to find a 225 to 230-pound back that holds it, right? Doesn't lose weight and get down to 205. We have some really, competent running backs in this group. We wanted to add some size. This guy runs hard. This guy has, you know, I think deceptive speed for a big back. He can be light on his feet as well. He does block, as you had mentioned. You know, he has the ability to catch the ball as well. So he's got versatility for a big back, and we needed to add that to the, you know, to the three that we already have or four that we already have. It'll be a really competitive group of running backs this year.
All right, to the undrafted rookie free agents. Now, you have 20, Thomas Dimitrov, that you signed. Most names are not known to most fans, and I know that you're really interested in all these guys to some degree or another. You wouldn't have signed them. However, there's always going to be one or two that you're really kind of intrigued. Did we find a little diamond in the rough? I don't know if you feel comfortable naming names, but are there a couple of guys in those 20 guys that you go, you know what, watch out for this guy?
Well, you know, those undrafted free agents are guys that we do a lot of work on, and there's a lot of recruiting that goes on there as well, right? They're important to finish out your roster. And as you know, every year maybe one or two has a shot at it. So, yeah, we're focused. We picked up the Rashard Kazi kid from Central Florida, who's, you know, he's a corner as well. We didn't get a chance to talk about our two acquired corners in the draft.
Right.
suffice it to say, it's an important position for us, having lost Alford this year. And so, you know, we're really focused in on where we are in the corners and how we're going to grow them. You know, KZ, of course, is going to be, you know, involved in the nickel situation a lot. We have expectations for him that are solid, of course. So that secondary is important. It will never not be important from year to year, as you guys know. It's unfortunate, but it is an area that, you know, whether there are injuries, there's always movement around. So that corner situation is important. You know, we brought in the Jason Stanley kid from Georgia. You know, we listed him as a corner. He has ability to play receiver, but he is a heck of a special teams guy as well. I'm looking forward to seeing him. You guys probably remember him moving around. He can fly down the field, and hopefully we can develop him. So those are two guys that stick out to me right now. We have a couple other guys, you know, at the linebacker position that will continue to develop. And I'll be really encouraged and excited to see how everything plays out in the next little while. We're going into phase two, and that's where our focus is right now.
Well, when is rookie minicamp, Thomas?
Rookie minicamp will be next week.
And then and to the cornerbacks, Kendall Sheffield's injuries, when do you expect he might be able to participate fully?
No, you know, he worked out well for us at Hart at the you know, at Ohio State's facility, and again, that guy can flat out fly. I mean, he would have been one of the top speed guys in the entire draft. Of course, he had his pec and everything, but he worked out well for us, and we're just going to monitor. Hopefully sooner than later he'll be ready to go, but he's out moving around for sure.
Sounds great. Thomas Dew, I appreciate you taking the time here. We look forward to rookie minicamp next week, and we'll get a chance to see some of these guys. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
Have a good one.
Thomas Dimitroff, general manager of the Atlanta Falcons, going through kind of the list. Yeah, I'm always intrigued, Hugh, by those undrafted free agents for some reason. You know, a guy gets a shot. You know, can he make it?
Yeah, get a shot, can he make it? And there are stories of guys that have made teams from being that undrafted guy. So, you know, it's not far-fetched that you could actually make the squad.
All right, we'll talk about some of the things. I took a couple of notes about some of the things that he talked about and dissect that a little bit when we get around the corner here with John and Hugh on the morning show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com. Morning show with John and Hugh on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk a little Atlanta United with the voice of the Five Stripes, Mike Connie. He's brought to you by Brightbox Electrical, Atlanta's unshockingly good electricians. And it wasn't very electric at Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but it was good enough to get a 1-0 win over the Colorado Rapids. And a win's a win at this point. Hey, Mike.
Yeah, win's a win. Played out the way I was worried about, where Colorado would play a line of five and a line of four and just kind of sit back and try to play for a scoreless draw. And, you know, the sad thing is that's unfortunately going to be a strategy for a lot of teams coming into Mercedes-Benz Stadium, because it almost worked for Colorado. It did work for Cincinnati. I think you could make an argument if Philadelphia played that way. Philadelphia did not play as open as we thought. It worked for them. They got a draw. Dallas didn't really sit back like that, but they wasted time after they got the early goal. So it's a strategy that is working, and it's unfortunately something that doesn't produce very exciting soccer. The final 10-15 minutes of the match were pretty exciting after Atlanta United got the goal, because then it did get wide open. But unfortunately, this is what happens when you're a big club. And it's like Frank DeBoer said, you know, when he was at Barca, this is what teams did to them in their park. They kind of sit back and they hope for a scoreless draw, and Colorado almost got it.
Yeah, Mike Conte, when you look at the way that Atlanta United is playing right now and some of the things that are going, it looks like the team is a little bit frustrated. And I'm asking you to speculate, because we don't know. Yeah. Do you think it's more because of the way that clubs are playing Atlanta United, or is it more the way that they're playing themselves? Which one do you think it could be at this point?
It's probably a little bit of both. I mean, and Frank DeBoer said after the match, they want to go out and entertain the fans, mm-hmm. but the objective is to win first, right? Like, if Atlanta United – let me just briefly try to explain why it looked the way it did. Okay, so Colorado's putting 9 men behind the ball. Atlanta is playing with 3 in the back, plus your goalkeeper. So basically it's 6 attacking players versus 9 defending players. Okay, no team, you know, Barcelona, Manchester United, no one's going to be able to score a ton of goals playing through that kind of mess, unless you have what happened last year to Atlanta United, where you get a lot of penalty kicks, or you get some free kick magic like you had from Kevin Kratz, or you get a couple own goals or something like that. Atlanta United really hasn't been getting any of that this year. But you have that numbers disadvantage, okay? You're playing 6-on-9. if Atlanta United wants to throw the kitchen sink and bring everyone up into the attack, yeah, that's going to be fun to watch, and we're going to have a crowded final third, and things are going to happen. But if one Colorado player gets in behind and there's a ball that just kind of bounces out, they're in on a 60-yard breakaway, and it's probably 1-0 then. So you have to, I guess, take a responsible approach that you got to win the game first.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, what you saw Saturday is a strategy to get you a win without necessarily being the most entertaining. So back to your point about frustration. It's frustrating when you go into a match and the club you're playing against doesn't want to play, and they've declared their intentions even before the match began. I mean, Anthony Hudson, their manager, basically said on Thursday, we're just going to have to play this way. And then he put out a 5-4-1 on the team sheet. We knew what was going to happen. That's frustrating. You want to go out and have fun. But I think also there's no doubt about it. I mean, the finishing has not been there. And that's going to get some individuals frustrated because they want to go out and score goals. And they've had opportunities to score, and they have not converted.
Mike Honey joining us, talking a little bit about the Five Stripes. Tito Villalba is energy, 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 and as well as he's playing, you got to consider starting him?
Well, you have been starting him. I mean, this was the first time he came off the bench. It's interesting because you started Tito over Pitti against Dallas. Pitti comes off the bench, and it's like, wow, you know, Pitti's bringing all this energy. Well, of course, he's got fresh legs.
Let me rephrase that then. Do you consider putting out what would essentially be a NASCAR package, for lack of a better term, and putting out all those guys, all of your scorers up front?
And
not the Breck Shays, but I mean, you throw Tito and Pitti and Joseph and Barco and everybody.
If you do that, you'd probably have to have Nagby playing left back, which, by the way, I mean, full credit to Nagby in the 20 or so minutes where he was left back. I mean, he created a goal, basically. He did a great job, but that was only for 20 minutes. I don't think it's that simple. I also think you have to remember that Barco is probably going to the U-20 World Cup in a couple weeks. So Sunday might be the last time you have Barco for like 2 months. So this will probably solve itself, where then, you know, either Pitti plays centrally or someone else plays centrally, and then you have Villalba in there. I think what we saw on Saturday was more evidence that this team plays better when Barco is central as opposed to Pitti. I know Frank DeBoer said afterwards they look at Pitti as a number 10. He's probably going to have to play that role when Barco goes to the U-20 World Cup.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I mean, that's going to be a lot of matches where you aren't going to have Barco now. And that's ugh. You don't like that because Barco is playing really well. So I get your point on Villalba. I think maybe an adjustment they would look at short-term is maybe moving Barco back centrally and then trying to figure out, okay, what do you do with Pitti and Villalba, maybe make a decision.
Speaking of Pitti, two things. Is he 90 minutes ready yet in your estimation?
I guess not, because they took him out after he had really started to come into the match.
Yes, and is he starting to press a little bit because he's not living up to the expectations, his own expectations at this point?
You'd have to ask him that. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, a lot of people were tweeting at me over the weekend about the way he reacted to being subbed out of the match. And my response to that is, you don't want to see a guy ever be happy to be subbed out,
mm-hmm.
okay? And, you know, Pitti put in a beautiful cross to Joseph right before he was subbed out. He probably felt like he had really finally gotten
started
into a groove.
And,
man, now you're hooking me? Ah, geez, I want to stay in the match. That's what I'm guessing. There might be some personal frustration there because Pitti is struggling. I mean, there's absolutely no question about it. He's struggling. Things came a lot easier for him last year in Argentina. He was the South American Player of the Year, but he wasn't playing the number 10 with River Plate. This is kind of a newish role for Pitti Martinez, what we saw on Saturday. And, yeah, Hugh, I mean, I think Pitti has very high expectations for himself. Some of that comes with the price tag. He is struggling. The only way that he's going to be able to get past that is to get more time, more games, and, you know, hopefully something positive happens for him in one of these upcoming matches. Like I said, you're going to see a lot of Pitti Martinez going forward now because Barco's about to go to the U-20 World Cup.
We at the Post and the Woodwork more than we've scored goals this year?
Well, it's funny. I was talking to Jimmy Vance about that on the elevator. If Villalba, if that beautiful, it almost looked like the Barco goal at New England, if that doesn't hit the post and goes in and it's 2-0, I think people are probably thinking a lot differently about what happened on Saturday this morning. And this is something I think a lot of people forget. Last year, especially early in the season, Atlanta United had 9 goals by this time last year from the penalty spot, from direct free kicks, and own goals. They've only had 1 such goal this year. I'm not saying they were lucky last year, but fortunate. They also scored a ton of goals in stoppage time at the end of matches early on last year. They haven't done that at all this year because they've been in even matches, you know, where it's 1-1 or whatever. Whereas last year, Atlanta United might be up 1-0, 2-0. Other teams sending everyone forward, they can hit them on a counter. It's been a weird year. Very weird.
Thanks, Mike. Look forward to the game in Kansas City late night.
Late night, yes. But it's in Central Time, so it won't be that late for
us. Oh,
there.
For you, yeah. I mean, it's only about you. That's all that matters.
Right.
Mike Conte, of course, you can catch him always as the voice of the Five Stripes and everything else, a man of many hats. Top of the hour, it's Andy and Randy.
Andy, Randy.
On Sports Radio 92 and the game.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.